Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher, and today's program is the second part of our two-part series on the replacement of Interstate I-81 in Syracuse. On our previous program, which you can find on the Campbell Conversations webpage under the Local Programming tab at WRVO.org, we heard the case for a street-level community grid and against the rebuilding of the elevated highway. Today, we're going to hear from two guests who believe that disconnecting Route 81 through the city and replacing it wholesale with a community-level, street-level grid would be a mistake for the Syracuse area. New York State Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli represents the 129th District, which includes much of the city of Syracuse. He's joined by the supervisor for the town of DeWitt, Ed Michalenko. Assemblyman Magnarelli, Supervisor Michalenko, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here.
All right, so I'll start, Supervisor Michalenko, with you, and we'll get into the many reasons why you and the Assemblyman think that it's important and necessary not to disconnect the highway through the city and replace it with just a community grid. But I want to ask a prior question, drawing on your expertise as an engineer, among other things, and that is, just if we think about, and I'm going to simplify this. I'm going to frame it in terms of elevated highway versus community grid. I know it can get more complicated than that, but a lot of the debate centers on those two options. So let's just for now think about these two. Just in terms of both the finished product and in terms of the construction process that would be necessary to create those two options, which one would be more disruptive to the status quo? Rebuilding the elevated highway or tearing it all down and putting a community grid in its place?
Well, first, let me start off just by reiterating that replacing the elevated highway with the current configuration isn't on anybody's radar. I haven't heard any advocate of a hybrid solution that says replace it as is. We're looking for a hybrid, again, which gives the goals and the solutions for the grid, but still allows and maintains the connection of north-south traffic through the city of Syracuse. And so if it's an elevated highway, construction in terms of interference or disruptions really comes down to the design and the schedule of the projects. I mean, just recently the Tappan Zee Bridge was replaced with the Mario Cuomo Bridge, and there was no interruption. It was a 6-year project, and traffic, to my understanding, and my in-laws live in New York City, we travel that all the time, and there was never any real disruption or flow of traffic because the construction was performed in stages and it was very well orchestrated in its implementation. And so whether a highway is constructed, whether a grid is constructed, there will be, you know, some there's going to be disruption in any construction project, but in terms of the moving of traffic and the maintenance of the necessary travel routes for most individuals, if it's staged properly, it can have a minimal impact.
Either way.
Yeah, either way.
Either way. And Assemblyman, is that the same way you see that particular
thing? I think you can see that in what's already happening. You know, we've already started reconstructing our interstate highway in Syracuse. The Teal Avenue Bridge was completely taken down, on and off ramps, completely redone. It took over a year, about a year and a half to do. Was there disruption? Yeah, that's where I live. And there was a little disruption, but nothing that anybody really complained about. The only complaint I got was when they were pounding in the, the girders to hold up the bridge and was making noise in the middle of the night. Okay. But that was the only time I received a complaint about what was going on. And the people are absolutely happy with the final result of that construction. So, you know, we've seen it already. I agree with the supervisor. I think it's all a matter of staging and planning and how you're going to reroute traffic as we go on. But no matter which project, I would whatever project it comes down to, I would hope we all work to mitigate whatever problems there are.
Okay, so let me then move to the big topic here that's going to occupy us for most of the time, obviously, and that is I want to get a sense from the two of you about why you think it's so important to maintain the highway in whatever form through the city and not disconnect it and then, again, not replace it with just simply this street-level community grid. So I want to break that out into a couple different ways to think about this. The first one, I guess, is the more negative one. And Assemblyman Magnarelli, I'll start with you on this, but what problems do you see for the city itself and then also for the surrounding region if this were to be replaced simply with a street level community grid and the traffic were to be rerouted around 481? What's that going to do for the city that's problematic?
Well, I believe that, and I have this from living in the city or in this area for 69 years or 70 years now. And the problem is that neighborhoods within the city are going to have real problems. For example, the north side of Syracuse, the valley down on the south side of Syracuse. The way people get around in Syracuse, the people of Syracuse themselves, I'm not talking about suburbanites, they use Route 81. For example, if you're in the valley right now and you wanted to see a movie at Destiny, it takes you about 5 to 10 minutes. If this goes down, it'll take you, I don't care what anybody tells me about traffic lights or engineering or anything else, it's going to take you a half an hour or more. Now, people may say that doesn't matter, that, you know, that it's a little bit more time, it's worth it. But this is everyone is going to be affected, not just the people who live next to the viaduct, but everybody in the city of Syracuse is going to be affected by this. As you go out, there's even more of an effect into the suburbs and into the region. It's important that Route 81 continue to be a north-south interstate for this region. And, you know, I don't know what else to say about that, but I feel that that's going to be a real problem if we cut it.
So, Supervisor, I know you want to jump in on this, but let me ask one follow-up to the Assemblyman first, and that is, do you perceive that problem that you just identified would become magnified if there was a significant weather event or some other sort of external shock to the system when you've already got – I mean, I'm assuming you're envisioning this greater amount of traffic and sort of that leading to these multiple backups, so to speak.
Yes, and what I'm talking about is neighborhoods, okay? The north, again, I grew up on the north side of Syracuse. It is basically where we have refugees and immigrants, and it always has been. I mean, starting with the Germans and the Irish and the Italians, then the Southeast Asians, now we got Bhutanese, Somalis, Congolese, all on the north side of Syracuse. We have schools, we have churches, we have people who are walking the streets all the time. You're going to drop 80,000 cars a day onto the grid. And people don't understand what we mean by the grid. The grid is every single street in the city of Syracuse. People are going to find, and this is the only thing I agree with with people who want the community grid. I agree with one thing. People will find their way. They will find a way to get to their destination the quickest way possible. Well, you start driving hundreds, not thousands, but hundreds of cars down these neighborhood streets, and you are changing the lives of people within the city of Syracuse. That's my concern.
Supervisor, how do you see this playing out, maybe in terms of the suburbs, but if you also want to comment on the city patterns as well?
I am the president of the Onondaga Environmental Institute. For decades now, we've done a lot of work in the Onondaga Lake watershed and Onondaga Creek. I sponsored the Onondaga Earth Corps. We helped set them up. We worked with the Partnership for Onondaga Creek. We have Our organization, the Onondaga Environmental Institute, is a member of the Urban Jobs Task Force, and so we're familiar with the issues that the assemblyman is talking about. And we are advocates for residents in these in the neighborhoods. And that's one of our – so, yeah, I want to agree with what he said about neighborhoods in the city. It's not uncommon. I've been asking for 5 to 7 years now when I go into a neighborhood, what do you think of the grid option? And I'll have a resident on the south side tell me, oh, I get on at Calvin Street, and I want to get to the airport. I don't want to have to go around 690 or 481. And so I did a few calculations as an environmentalist. And bear with me for a minute. But with only an 8-minute increase in time, you're adding 64 hours to an individual's commute if they make that trip twice a day, back and forth to work 5 days a week. Over the course of that year, you're expending an additional 200 gallons of gasoline. You're costing that individual in excess of $500 at a rate of $2.50 a gallon. From an atmosphere or carbon dioxide release standpoint, you're generating per individual car 4,000 pounds of carbon dioxide in a year. If only 10,000 people have the additional 8-minute commute, you're generating 40 million pounds of carbon dioxide excess a year. In terms of toxic gases, one individual with that 8 extra minutes would generate 840 pounds of toxic pollutants, and that's a mixture of all sorts of noxious chemicals. If only 10,000 people had the 8-minute additional commute, you're generating over 8.5 million pounds of toxic chemicals a year. And as the assemblyman already noted, we could be talking numbers as high as 50,000, maybe 60,000 individuals that are faced with these additional commute times both. And that impact will be spread along the grid and in the suburbs.
So let me jump in on that. And what I have heard from some of the grid advocates, though, in response, I think, to that, the nature of that kind of criticism is that, well, among other benefits, this will create more public transportation usage, and so that will cut back on that. You're not seeing this?
I would advocate that.
Sure.
One of the things that we've said from the get-go, and I've been involved in this conversation for 7 years now, is that let's look at this from a regional perspective. But we asked for a regional transportation study be performed, that managed transit be part of the conversation. You know, there's so many interstate issues that have been left out of the conversation. What are the folks at Fort Drum feel about this? The interstate system was built in part for national defense, and I haven't heard anybody say anything about, you know, like the internet operates with multiple pathways, so does national defense. And so the movement and transportation of goods and services and commodities, the world we live in today, people don't stay in the same place for an 8-hour window. Many of our workers are constantly mobile. What are the added costs to commerce in terms of moving goods, package carriers, health workers, you know, postal workers? All of these folks are impacted on this conversation, and it needed to be looked at a regional scale.
I want to chime in on that. I'm hearing from even small manufacturers in the area who have to get a piece of what they're building to another manufacturer who adds a piece to it. And they're constantly crisscrossing Onondaga County. The interstate system is there for them to work as well. And we're just losing all of that by bringing everything down to the city streets. And that's the reason why we feel the interstate must remain.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and my guests are New York State Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli and DeWitt Town Supervisor Ed Michalenko, and we're discussing the future of Interstate I-81 in the city of Syracuse. Assemblyman, I wanted to ask another piece of the question about this that kind of got intimated at one point, but one of the concerns about the elevated highway as it currently exists is the history regarding it in terms of what it has done or it is asserted to have done to neighborhoods in the city, and particularly the neighborhood sitting right under there that was largely, you know, an African-American community that the argument goes was really hurt significantly in a lot of different ways by the building of I-81. How would that splitting of that neighborhood be addressed? Could it be addressed by some sort of rebuild of a different kind of viaduct, or does that require there to be nothing going over at that point? How do you see that working out?
Well, first of all, to talk about the history of the neighborhood is very valid. And although I was just a teenager at the time, back in the 60s when they were building this, I assume that people had good intentions in what they were doing, and I don't believe that the 81 project, people looked at it as something that was going to end up doing the things that it did. I also believe that the poverty that is in that area, right in the shadow of the viaduct, is created not only by the viaduct. There's a lot of factors that go into that, not just the viaduct. And I think that anything that we do going forward would have to take into account what we're going to do with housing and transportation, etc. I was an advocate for the connective corridor. And if you look at the streets and what we did with that in terms of walkability, bicycling, bus lanes, all of those things were built into the connective corridor. So I'm an advocate for doing that kind of stuff. And I know we've come a long way since then as well, as far as smart streets are concerned. I don't see any of these projects leaving that out. It doesn't matter whether it's a viaduct, a tunnel, or the grid. We need to do those things for that area, and I believe the engineers can. I don't care if it's a big bridge or it's a tunnel or it's the connective corridor. Any way we do it, we're going to have to take into consideration those things going forward. I just got back from a trip to California, and I saw scooters on every corner. I mean, they're all over the place. Scooters, bicycles, walking. There's going to be different modes of transportation. There's no question about that. We have to take that into consideration. But that doesn't mean you take 81 away.
Supervisor, what are your views on this?
I couldn't agree more. The whole concept of smart growth and smart growth principles are something that we're all about, and we'd love to see designed for sustainable practices. And all three of the options will allow for that. And so that's one of the reasons we've been advocating for the hybrid approach. The hybrid approach allows the goals and the objectives of the community grid to be incorporated into whatever solution maintains the connection.
On this hybrid, and I kind of wanted to stay away from this just because it makes the question a lot more complex for 27 minutes, but quickly on this, Assemblyman, my take on this is that the tunnel really is not going to be one of the viable options because of the cost. Do you see that way or not?
Well, I have to admit that if the community is not behind it 100%, then you're probably right, okay? On the other hand, I don't know why we're not, since it would take into consideration all of the issues that everyone has been bringing up, whether you live in the shadow of the viaduct or if you live on the north side, the valley, or in the suburbs or in the region. This is a regional issue. It is not just a downtown Syracuse issue. And I think that those who are trying to make it such are missing the bigger picture.
And I'm just building right off of that last point, Supervisor, or did you want to jump in on that? Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, again, there are construction techniques that will allow for a relatively cost-efficient tunnel to be put in place, but there's box tunnel construction practices, and many of the larger cities actually use that construction in sewers, and there's a far less benefit for sewers in using those practices than there is in a highway. And so the benefits for applying that technology to a highway could be applied here. One of the concerns about the tunnel now is, as the assemblyman's already pointed out, is that we've spent the last 10 years rebuilding the infrastructure and the existing highway system that would get us to a tunnel. And so now the approaches that you would need are going to be difficult to reach. Can you bring cars down to the correct elevation and then back up? You know, because Onondaga Creek and West Street and Teal Ave and Spencer Street and Court Street and all those approaches to the south have already been reconstructed, it's going to make it difficult for the tunnel. But the tunnel option could be a viable, and it's not necessarily as expensive as you would think. And I point this out constantly, too, that New York State pays the second highest amount in federal taxes to the federal system. We get 90 cents back on a dollar for every dollar we pay into the system. It's time we started to place some burden on the federal government into bringing these projects to bear and bring some of that money back to New York State.
Let me build off of the last thing that the assemblyman said, put this question to you, Supervisor. It's, first of all, an observation that I think it's fair to say that the views on this issue have become quite strong. And if the decision in the end is not to have a wholesale replacement with a community level grid and a disconnect of I-81 through the city, if that does end up being the decision, I think that there are some people in the city and some groups in the city that are going to view this as a slap against the city and also against disadvantaged groups within the city. I think that's a fair prediction. So what process do you see for addressing that?
Okay. I don't think that that's a fair assumption because
I'm basing that on what I'm hearing in the debates now.
Yeah, and I think that the more vocal part of the debate are the pro-grid advocates. I know that. But when you take surveys or you do any kind of a study into where the people in the city of Syracuse are on this matter, the grid never comes out as the majority, never. And so, and it's funny. And the places, obviously in the center city and in the university area, it plays a lot better as far as the grid is concerned. But if you're in the neighborhoods in the city, the vast part of the city of Syracuse, which I represent, by the way, the people, they're stopping me at Wegmans and when I'm coming out of church, and they keep saying to me, keep the bridges, keep the bridges. I don't believe that there's going to be that much of a disconnect. And the other thing I've always been saying, and I'll say this for myself, okay, just my own view, whatever it is, we need to get together as a community behind whichever project it is.
Well, that's precisely my concern in asking this question.
Right. I'll be the first one to agree with you that we have to come together. And it doesn't matter which one it is, as far as I'm concerned. When it's all done and the environmental impact study is finished and all of the procedures have been gone through and everybody has had their say and their time to put in whatever they want, we have to come together and then move forward and get this thing done, no matter which project it is.
But to come back to this question and Supervisor Michalenko, I still think it's going to be the case, though, that for some groups, if that is the decision, it will be seen as like, the suburbs got their way. I think that's fair. And since you represent a suburb and one that's close in, how do you see that playing out?
Well, I'm actually closer to this issue in my day job. I'm the president of the Onondaga Environmental Institute. And again, we've had a fairly lengthy track record of working with many of the underserved communities in central New York and in the Onondaga Creek watershed, which composes the bulk of the Southside and Valley areas. And the grid has been painted as a social and environmental justice issue. And I think that's what you're driving at here. And
right.
And these social and environmental justice issues are much deeper than just transportation issues. And I know the mayor and the county executive have gotten together and they've put together some issues. And poverty isn't limited to the city alone. Central New York in general has to work, and we have to work together to improve our local economy. It's no secret that the cities along upstate New York have suffered for the last 50 years in the economy. I'll talk from my DeWitt perspective for a moment. But I grew up in East Syracuse, which is a highly industrial area. I became an environmentalist because I used to look out my bedroom window and I could tell you the smokestacks that were on by the sound. The bad news is all those jobs are gone. And that's one of the reasons that many of the public or the people moved to the suburbs. They moved for jobs. Again, in 1960 and 1970, much of my neighborhood walked to work, and they walked to places like Huffman Air Filtration and Oberdorfer Foundries and Roth Brothers Steel and Carrier and New Venture Gear and Lampson and Light Rollaway, and I can go on and on and on about the industries that no longer exist. And so the loss of those manufacturing jobs left a hole, and it left an economic void where we need to truly address poverty. And so, the only thing I can tell you is that those issues are much deeper rooted than a highway, an elevated highway. My grandmother lived in Stafford Avenue, Eastwood, and her mother lived in Canal Street, and 690 separated and destroyed the neighborhood that they grew up in. And so this problem of destruction of neighborhood and the highway and the movement of transportations and the shift to automobiles, all of these things need to be worked on.
We are discussing the future of I-81, and my two guests are New York State Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli and DeWitt Town Supervisor Ed Michalenko. They are in favor of, or let me put it this way, more precisely, they are not in favor of disconnecting Route I-81 through the city and replacing it wholesale with a community street-level grid. They want to explore other alternatives to that. I just had one other question that I wanted to put to the two of you, and Assemblyman Magnarelli, I'll start with you. It's a version of the question that I asked the two advocates for the community grid in a previous program. I want you to take the other side. I want you to think about this from the perspective of a supporter of the community grid and say, what is the most important positive thing that would come out of doing that, that would come out of disconnecting I-81 and replacing it with a street-level community grid? What would be the best thing for the city that would come out of that? Make the strongest argument that you can for that.
Me? Okay.
Yeah. Put you on the spot.
All right. I think it's cheaper, and it would take less time. Those two things I can't argue with. I think it would be cheaper and it would take less time, but overall I think it would be detrimental to the city.
Supervisor Michalenko, how would you answer that?
I would add to what I agree with the Assemblyman, that there would be notable returns in tax revenue to the city through the development of the corridor. But I want to flip it back on it because the history of what's happening in terms of the development in the city is it's going to take a while for those returns to come. Okay. The housing renaissance in the city actually has foregone about $53 million in tax revenue to the city in the next 12 years through the process of what's called a 485A tax exemption. So many of the developers behind the grid are capitalizing on the housing renaissance. That housing renaissance, in many cases, is gentrifying the neighborhoods. But on top of that, there's not a large return to the city and the tax revenue until for years out. And those right now it's scheduled about 12 years before you start to see any tax return. The 485A forgoes all taxes for 12 years, and then from year 12 to year 20 scales back up to the full assessed value of the property. The Post Standard recently did an article on this, and if you go calculate out what that means, it means about a loss in revenue of about $53 million to the city. And so on top of the fact that it's cheaper and that it would be implemented faster, the long return to the city is the development and the tax revenues from that corner.
Long return. Assemblyman, you were making some gestures while he was talking. Well, do you want to add to that?
Only that I believe that, you know, a lot of the proponents of developing in the area, that more land would be developable. I would just like to say I don't believe any more land is going to be developable that is now state land. The arterial would still have to be there, whether they call it a boulevard or whatever. But that swath of land is still going to be covered with pavement. Now, it may be all at street level, but you're still going to have that. So I don't believe that the state is going to let go of acres and acres of land. That's just false. The other part of it is, though, that the land that's going to be developed is the land that's owned by these developers and the owners or the architects are working for, you know. I mean, it's development downtown. It's something that I've been doing all my life. I understand it. I don't blame them for it. I think it's a good idea if they can do it. And I think they can do it no matter which project is taken. But, you know, the bottom line is it's not, you know, and I don't know how to say this correctly, but what we are talking about or we were talking about before was poverty and a neighborhood that is going to be disrupted. Those things are going to happen no matter which project we pick, because the housing in that area is ready to be redone again. Okay, its useful life is over. When you talk about Pioneer Homes, etc., so there is going to be new development of housing there. But when you start talking about mixed use, different forms of residential housing, so that there isn't a confluence of abject poverty in one place.
Like the Blueprint 15.
That's
vision.
Right. Those okay. are all very good things, but other people may call it gentrification as well. So I think we have to be careful on what we're doing here, and it's more than just the shadow of 81 that we're talking about, and a lot more talk has to be had on poverty, housing, mass transit. Those are all things that have to be dealt with, but not necessarily connected only with 81, okay?
That's a good place to end. Again and again, I just want to thank the two of you for making the time to talk to me and to give me some extra time. That was Bill Magnarelli and Ed Michalenko. And again, you can find our previous program with guests arguing in favor of disconnecting the route through the city on I-81 and replacing it with a community street-level grid at WRVO.org. Supervisor Michalenko and Assemblyman Magnarelli, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.